There's a great song to be made from this, and I'm the one to make it, he told Catelyn Stark when he announced his intention of riding with them to see how the splendid adventure turned out. Tyrion wondered whether the boy would think the adventure quite so splendid once the Lannister riders caught up with them. The rain had finally stopped, and dawn light was seeping through the wet cloth over his eyes when Catelyn Stark gave the command to dismount. Rough hands pulled him down from his horse, untied his wrists, and yanked the hood off his head. When he saw the narrow, stony road, the foothills rising high and wild all around them, and the jagged, snow-capped peaks on the distant horizon, all the hope went out of him in a rush.
"This is the High Road," he gasped, looking at Lady Stark with accusation. "The Eastern Road! You said we were riding for Winterfell."
Catelyn Stark favoured him with the faintest of smiles.
"Often and loudly," she agreed. "No doubt your friends will ride that way when they come after us. I wish them good speed."
Even now, long days after, the memory filled him with a bitter rage. All his life, Tyrion had prided himself on his cunning, the only gifts the guards had seen fit to give him, and yet this seven-times-damned she-wolf, Catelyn Stark, had outwitted him at every turn. The knowledge was more galling than the bare fact of his abduction. They stopped only as long as it took to feed and water the horses, and then they were off again. This time, Tyrion was spared the hood. After the second night, they no longer bound his hands, and once they had gained the heights, they scarcely bothered to guard him at all. It seemed they did not fear his escape, and why should they? Up here, the land was harsh and wild, and the high road little more than a stony track. If he did run, how far could he hope to go, alone and without provisions? The Shadow Cats would make a morsel of him, and the clans that dwelt in the mountain fastnesses were brigands and murderers who bowed to no law but the sword. Yet still the Stark woman drove them forward relentlessly. He knew where they were bound. He had known it since the moment they pulled off his hood. These mountains were the domain of House Aaron, and the late Hand's widow was a Tully, Catelyn Stark's sister and no friend to the Lannisters. Tyrion had known the Lady Lysa slightly during her years at King's Landing, and did not look forward to renewing the acquaintance. His captors were clustered around a stream a short ways down the high road. The horses had drunk their fill of the icy cold water and were grazing on clumps of brown grass that grew from clefts in the rock. Jick and Morrick huddled close, sullen and miserable. Mohor stood over them, leaning on his spear and wearing a round iron cap that made him look as if he had a bowl on his head. Nearby, Marillion, the singer, sat oiling his wood harp, complaining of what the damp was doing to his strings.
"We must have some rest, my lady,"
the hedge knight, Sir Willis Wode, was saying to Catelyn Stark as Tyrion approached. He was Lady Wentzman, stiff-necked and stolid, and the first to rise to aid Catelyn Stark back at the inn.
"Sir Willis speaks true, my lady," Sir Roderick said. "This is the third horse we have lost.
We will lose more than horses if we're overtaken by the Lannisters," she reminded them. Her face was wind-burnt and gaunt, but it lost none of its determination.
"Small chance of that here," Tyrion put in.
"The lady did not ask your views, dwarf," snapped Curlicat, a great fat oath, with short-cropped hair and a pig's face.
He was one of the Brackens, a man-at-arms in the service of Lord Jonas. Tyrion had made a special effort to learn all their names so that he might thank them later for their tender treatment of him. A Lannister always pays his debts. Curlicat would learn that some day, as would his friends, Larys and Mohar, and the good Sir Willis, and the sellswords Bronn and Chiggan. He planned an especially sharp lesson for Marillion, him of the wood harp and the sweet tenor voice, who was struggling so manfully to rhyme imp with gimp and limp, so he could make a song of this outrage. Let him speak, Lady Stark commanded. Tyrion Lannister seated himself on a rock.
By now our pursuit is likely racing across the neck, chasing your lie up the King's Road, assuming there is a pursuit, which is by no means certain. Oh, no doubt the word has reached my father, but my father does not love me overmuch, and I am not at all sure that he will bother to bestir himself.
It was only half a lie. Lord Tywin Lannister cared not a fig for his deformed son, but he tolerated no slights on the honor of his house.
This is a cruel landlady, Stark. You'll find no succor until you reach the Vale. And each mount you lose burdens the others all the more. Worse, you risk losing me. I'm small and not strong, and if I die, then what's the point?
That was no lie at all. Tyrion did not know how much longer he could endure this pace.
It might be said that your death is the point, Lannister, Catelyn Stark replied. I think not, Tyrion said. If you wanted me dead, you had only to say the word, and one of these staunch friends of yours would gladly have given me a red smile.
He looked at Curlicott, but the man was too dim to taste the mockery. The Starks do not murder men in their beds.
Nor do I, he said. I tell you again, I had no part in the attempt to kill your son.
The assassin was armed with your dagger. Tyrion felt the heat rise in him.
It was not my dagger, he insisted. How many times must I swear to that? Lady Stark, whatever you may believe of me, I am not a stupid man. Only a fool would arm a common footpad with his own blade.
Just for a moment, he thought he saw a flicker of doubt in her eyes. But what she said was, why would Ptah lie to me?
Why does a bear shit in the woods? He demanded. Because it is his nature. Lying comes as easily as breathing to a man like Littlefinger.
You ought to know that, eh? You of all people.
She took a step toward him, her face tight.
And what does that mean, Lannister?
Tyrion cocked his head.
Why, every man at court has heard him tell how he took your maidenhead, my lady.
That is a lie, Catelyn Stark said.
A wicked little imp,
Marillion said, shocked. Curlicott drew his dirk, a vicious piece of black iron.
At your word, my lady, I'll touch his lying tongue at your feet.
His pig eyes were wet with excitement at the prospect. Catelyn Stark stared at Tyrion with a coldness on her face such as he had never seen. Ptah Baelish loved me once. He was only a boy. His passion was a tragedy for all of us, but it was real and pure, and nothing to be made mock of. He wanted my hand. That is the truth of the matter.
You are truly an evil man, Lannister.
And you are truly a fool, Lady Stark.
Littlefinger has never loved anyone but Littlefinger, and I promise you that it is not your hand that he boasts of. It's those ripe breasts of yours, and that sweet mouth, and the heat between your legs.
Curlicott grabbed a handful of hair and yanked his head back in a hard jerk, baring his throat. Tyrion felt the cold kiss of steel beneath his chin.
Sure, bleed him, my lady.
Kill me, and the truth dies with me, Tyrion gasped.
Let him talk, Catelyn Stark commanded. Curlicott let go of Tyrion's hair, reluctantly. Tyrion took a deep breath.
How did Littlefinger tell you I came by this dagger of his? Answer me that.
You won it from him in a wager during the tourney on Prince Joffrey's name day.
When my brother Jaime was on horse by the Knight of Flowers. That was his story, no?
It was, she admitted. A line creased her brow.
Riders!
The shriek came from the wind-carved ridge above them. Sir Roderick had sent Larry scrambling up the rock face to watch the road while they took their rest. For a long second, no one moved. Catelyn Stark was the first to react. Sir Roderick, Sir Willis, to horse, she shouted. Get the other mounts behind us. Mohor, guard the prisoners.
Armas!
Tyrion sprang to his feet and seized her by the arm.
You will need every sword.
She knew he was right. Tyrion could see it. The mountain clans kept nothing for the enmities of the great houses. They would slaughter Stark and Lannister with equal fervor, as they slaughtered each other. They might spare Catelyn herself. She was still young enough to bear sons. Still, she hesitated. I hear them, Sir Roderick called out. Tyrion turned his head to listen. And there it was, hoofbeats, a dozen horses or more, coming nearer. Suddenly everyone was moving, reaching for weapons, running to their mounts. Pebbles rained down around them as Larius came springing and sliding down the ridge. He landed breathless in front of Catelyn Stark, an ungainly-looking man, with wild tufts of rust-colored hair sticking out from under a conical steel cap.
20 men, maybe 25, he said, breathless. Milksnakes, or Moonbrothers bomb, I guess. They must have eyes out, milady. Hidden watchers. They know we're here.
Sir Roderick Cassell was already a horse, a long sword in hand. Mohawk crouched behind a boulder, both hands on his iron-tipped spear, a dagger between his teeth.
You, Singer, Sir Willis Word called out, help me with this breastplate.
Marillion sat frozen, clutching his wood harp, his face as pale as milk. But Tyrion's man, Morrick, bounded quickly to his feet and moved to help the knight with his armor. Tyrion kept his grip on Catelyn Stark. You have no choice, he told her. Three of us, and a fourth man, wasted guarding us. Four men can be the difference between life and death up here. Give me your word that you will put down your sword again after the fight is done. My word. The hoofbeats were louder now. Tyrion grinned crookedly. Oh, that you have, my lady, on my honor as a Lannister. For a moment he thought she would spit at him, but instead she snapped, arm them. And as quick as that she was pulling away. Sir Roderick tossed Jick his sword and scabbard and wheeled to meet the foe. Morrick helped himself to a bow and quiver and went to one knee beside the road. He was a better archer than the swordsman, and Bronn rode up to offer Tyrion a double-bladed axe. I have never fought with an axe. The weapon felt awkward and unfamiliar in his hands. It had a short haft, a heavy head, a nasty spike on top.
Pretend you're splitting lugs, Bronn said, drawing his long sword from the scabbard across his back.
He spat and trotted off to form up beside Chigan and Sir Roderick. Sir Willis mounted up to join them, fumbling with his helmet, a metal pot with a thin slit for his eyes and a long black silk plume.
Lugs don't bleed, Tyrion said to no one in particular.
He felt naked without armor. He looked around for a rock and ran over to where Marillion was hiding.
Move over! Go away, the boy screamed back at him. I'm a singer. I want no part of this fight.
What, lost your taste for adventure?
Tyrion kicked at the youth until he slid over, and not a moment too soon. A heartbeat later, the riders were on them. There were no heralds, no banners, no horns, nor drums, only the twang of bowstrings as Morrick and Larys let fly. And suddenly the clansmen came thundering out of the dawn, lean, dark men in boiled leather and mismatched armor, faces hidden behind barred half-helms. In their gloved hands were clutched all manner of weapons, long-swords and lances and sharpened scythes, spiked clubs and daggers and heavy iron mauls. At their head rode a big man in a striped shadowskin cloak, armed with a two-handed greatsword. Sir Roderick shouted, Winterfell! And rode to meet him, with Bronn and Chigim beside him, screaming some wordless battle cry. Sir Willis Woad followed, swinging a spiked morning star around his head.
Harrenhal! Harrenhal! He sang.
Tyrion felt a sudden urge to leap up, brandish his axe and boom out, Casterly Rock! But the insanity passed quickly, and he crouched down lower. He heard the screams of frightened horses and the crash of metal on metal. Chigan's sword raked across the naked face of a mailed rider, and Bronn plunged through the clansmen like a whirlwind, cutting down foes right and left. Sir Roderick hammered at the big man in the shadowskin cloak. their horses dancing around each other as they traded blow for blow. Jick vaulted onto a horse and galloped bareback into the fray. Tyrion saw an arrow sprout from the throat of the man in the shadow-skin cloak. When he opened his mouth to scream, only blood came out. By the time he fell, Sir Roderick was fighting someone else. Suddenly, Marillion shrieked, covering his head with his wood harp as a horse leapt over their rock. Tyrion scrambled to his feet as a rider turned to come back at them, hefting a spiked maul. Tyrion swung his axe with both hands. The blade caught the charging horse in the throat with a meaty thunk, angling upwards, and Tyrion almost lost his grip as the animal screamed and collapsed. He managed to wrench the axe free and lurch clumsily out of the way. Marillion was less fortunate. Horse and rider crashed to the ground in a tangle on top of the singer. Tyrion danced back in while the brigand's leg was still pinned beneath his fallen mount and buried the axe in the man's neck just above the shoulder blades. As he struggled to yank the blade loose, he heard Marillion moaning under the bodies.
"Somebody help me!" the singer gasped. "Gods have mercy, I'm bleeding!"
"I believe that's horse blood," Tyrion said. The singer's hand came crawling out from beneath the dead animal, scrabbling in the dirt like a spider with five legs. Tyrion put his heel on the grasping fingers and felt a satisfying crunch. "Close your eyes and pretend you're dead," he advised the singer, before he hefted the axe and turned away. After that, things ran together. The dawn was full of shouts and screams and heavy with the scent of blood, and the world had turned to chaos. Arrows hissed past his ear and clattered off the rocks. He saw Bronn unhorsed, fighting with a sword in each hand. Tyrion kept on the fringes of the fight, sliding from rock to rock and darting out of the shadows to hew at the legs of passing horses. He found a wounded clansman and left him dead, helping himself to the man's half-helm. It fit too snugly, but Tyrion was glad of any protection at all. Jick was cut down from behind while he sliced at a man in front of him, and later Tyrion stumbled over Curlicat's body. The pig face had been smashed in with a mace, but Tyrion recognized the dirk as he plucked it from the man's dead fingers. He was sliding it through his belt when he heard a woman scream. Catelyn Stark was trapped against the stone face of the mountain, with three men around her, one still mounted and the other two on foot. She had a dagger clutched awkwardly in her maimed hands, but her back was to the rock now, and they had penned her on three sides. "Let them have the bitch," Tyrion thought, "and welcome to her." Yet somehow he was moving. He caught the first man in the back of the knee before they even knew he was there, and the heavy axe head split flesh and bone like rotten wood. "Lugs that bleed," Tyrion thought inanely, as a second man came for him. Tyrion ducked under his sword, lashed out with his axe, the man reeled backwards, and Catelyn Stark stepped up behind him and opened his throat. The horseman remembered an urgent engagement elsewhere and galloped off suddenly. Tyrion looked around. The enemy were all vanquished or vanished. Somehow the fighting had ended when he wasn't looking. Dying horses and wounded men lay all around, screaming or moaning. To his vast astonishment, he was not one of them. He opened his fingers and let the axe thunk to the ground. His hand was sticky with blood. He could have sworn they had been fighting for half a day, but the sun seemed scarcely to have moved at all.
"Your first battle?"
Bronn asked later, as he bent over Jick's body, pulling off his boots. They were good boots, as befit one of Lord Tywin's men. Heavy leather, oiled and supple, much finer than what Bronn was wearing. Tyrion nodded. "My father would be so proud," he said. His legs were cramping so badly he could scarcely stand. Odd he had never once noticed the pain during the battle.
"You need a woman now," Bronn said, with a glint in his black eyes.
He shoved the boots into his saddlebag.
"Nothing like a woman, after a man's been blooded. Take my word."
Chigan stopped looting the corpses of the brigands long enough to snort and lick his lips. Tyrion glanced over to where Lady Stark was dressing Sir Roderick's wounds.
"I'm willing, if she is," he said.
The free riders broke into laughter, and Tyrion grinned and thought, "There's a start." Afterwards he knelt by the stream and washed the blood off his face in water cold as ice. As he limped back to the others, he glanced again at the slain. The dead clansmen were thin, ragged men, their horses scrawny and undersized, with every rib showing. What weapons Bronn and Chigan had left them were none too impressive. Mauls, clubs, a scythe. He remembered the big man in the shadowskin cloak who had duelled Sir Roderick with a two-handed greatsword, but when he found his corpse sprawled on the stony ground, the man was not so big after all. The cloak was gone, and Tyrion saw that the blade was badly notched, its cheap steel spotted with rust. Small wonder the clansmen had left 9 bodies on the ground. They had only 3 dead, 2 of Lord Bracken's men-at-arms, Curlicut and Mohor, and his own man Jick, who had made such a bold show with his bareback charge. A fool to the end, Tyrion thought.
Lady Stark, I urge you to press on with all haste,
Sir Willis Ward said, his eyes scanning the ridgetops warily through the slit in his helm.
We drove them off for the moment, but they will not have gone far.
We must bury our dead, Sir Willis, she said. These were brave men. I will not leave them to the crows and shadow cats.
The soil is too stony for digging, Sir Willis said.
Then we shall gather stones for cairns.
Gather all the stones you want, Bronn told her, but do it without me or Chigan. I've better things to do than pile rocks on dead men. Breathing, for one.
He looked over the rest of the survivors.
Any of you hope to be alive come nightfall, ride with us.
My lady, I fear he speaks the truth, Sir Roderick said wearily. The old knight had been wounded in the fight. A deep gash in his left arm, and a spear thrust that grazed his neck, and he sounded his age.
If we linger here, they will be on us again for a certainty, and we may not live through a second attack.
Tyrion could see the anger in Catelyn's face, but she had no choice. May the gods forgive us, then. We will ride at once. There was no shortage of horses now. Tyrion moved his saddle to Jick-spotted gelding, who looked strong enough to last another 3 or 4 days at least. He was about to mount when Larry stepped up and said, I'll take that dirk now, dwarf.
Let him keep it.
Catelyn Stark looked down from her horse. And see that he has his axe back as well. We may have need of it if we are attacked again.
You have my thanks, lady, Tyrion said, mounting up.
Save them, she said curtly. I trust you no more than I did before. She was gone before he could frame a reply. Tyrion adjusted his stolen helm and took the axe from Bronn. He remembered how he had begun the journey, with his wrists bound and a hood pulled down over his head, and decided this was a definite improvement. Lady Stark could keep her trust. So long as he could keep the axe, he would count himself ahead in the game. Sir Willis Ward led them out. Bronn took up the rear, with Lady Stark safely in the middle. Sir Roderick, a shadow beside her. Marillion kept throwing sullen looks back at Tyrion as they rode. The singer had broken several ribs, his wood harp, and all 4 fingers of his playing hand, yet the day had not been an utter loss to him. Somewhere he had acquired a magnificent shadow-skin cloak. Thick black fur slashed by stripes of white. He huddled beneath its folds silently, and for once had nothing to say. They heard the deep growls of shadow cats behind them before they had gone 1/2 mile, and later the wild snarling of the beasts fighting over the corpses they had left behind. Marillion grew visibly pale. Tyrion trotted up to him.
Craven, he said. Rhymes nicely with raven.
He kicked his horse and moved past the singer, up to Sir Roderick and Catelyn Stark. She looked at him, lips pressed tightly together.
"As I was saying before we were so rudely interrupted," Tyrion began, "there is a serious flaw in Littlefinger's fable. Whatever you may believe of me, Lady Stark, I promise you this. I never bet against my family."
Arya. The one-eared Black Tom arched his back and hissed at her. Arya padded down the alley, balanced lightly on the balls of her bare feet, listening to the flutter of her heart, breathing slow, deep breaths. "Quiet as a shadow," she told herself, "light as a feather." The tomcat watched her come, his eyes weary. Catching cats was hard. Her hands were covered with half-healed scratches, and both knees were scabbed over where she had scraped them raw in tumbles. At first, even the cook's huge, fat kitchen cat had been able to elude her.